Hey, happy preseason Eve, or at least for Celtics fans. First preseason game is going to be 3:30 Sunday today as this drops, with the Lakers versus the Nets. If you can find some sort of NBA Reddit stream to see that, but yeah, we're back, man. Basketball is back. No more media days. No more debating efficacy of vaccines and all that wonderfully fun stuff. But yeah, today we got Mo DeKeel. Mo is the man. He's done a lot in basketball. He's worn many different hats, had a lot of different experiences in a lot of different places, and he's been a professional and an aficionado of the basketball world every step of the way. And I'm a big fan of him and his work on podcast most recently with The Athletic and his work on Bleacher Report. So big shout out to Mo. Thank you so much for coming on. So it was really cool to spend some time with him, as you'll see here coming up. But yeah, we have a little giveaway going on Twitter. We miraculously eclipsed 200 followers somehow, so we decided to give some stuff out of our basketball war chests away. We got the original logo of the Ball Year Round logo sticker. It's a one of one. There will never be another one made because it's been DMCA'd out of the universe or the ether of the internet. So that's in there. We got a couple basketball cards, Steph Curry, Jason Tatum, and we have the new logo, Ball Year Round Podcast's new logos T-shirt in there as well. So you get all of that just for a retweet and a follow. At least you get entered to win all of that potentially. So go check out at BYRP365 on Twitter and find our giveaway there. It should be the pinned tweet. If not, it's the pinned tweet on at Lenny Biased. You can always find Andy at AJRoshan22. But yeah, that's enough for me. You guys want to hear from Mo DeKeel, the man himself. Enjoy. Joined by Big J journalist Mo DeKeel. Mo got his start in the industry as a student manager for Santa Monica College and USC. He springboarded those experiences into several stops as a video coordinator with the Clippers, Spurs, and Team Australia. Since then, he's pivoted to the media world, launching the basketball website and podcast The Jump Ball in 2015. And he is now an NBA analyst for Bleacher Report and regularly appears on The Athletic podcast, The NBA Show, which is one of my favorites. So we're looking forward to learning from him, one of the best of the business today. So without further ado, Mo DeKeel, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good, man. That's a great intro. I'm done. I'm not saying anything else after that. Like, we're good. Everybody have a good week. I'll see y'all later. Thank you guys for having me on.
No, we appreciate, we know it's morning time over there on the West Coast. We appreciate you carving out a little time in your busy schedule for us this morning.
Well, you got me at a good time. It's no basketball season. There's not a lot of basketball on, so you got.
Yeah, this is the magic dead zone. This will probably air in a few weeks, so it'll be probably preseason by the time this goes out. But right now, we're in between summer league and the preseason starting, so it's perfect dead zone to get a basketball mind like yourself on when there's not enough going on to keep you distracted,
keeping me busy. But, you know, of course, something will break while we're talking, and I'll be like,
right. Feel free to break any news you want. No, you got a scoop. No, we'll take it. But what got you into basketball? I know you started kind of career-wise with Santa Monica and the student manager experience, but obviously that seed was probably planted at some point in high school or was it junior high? What got you the itch?
I was always a huge basketball fan. Like all the way. My oldest sister loved the 80s Lakers and I started watching that with her, and then that just kind of evolved into me watching the Lakers all the time. Like, I was a diehard Laker fan for the longest time. Didn't play high school basketball, you know, like was short, was just not, still kind of short, but like was still
I should say average. I'm average height.
But then I would hit a growth spurt, but like didn't play high school basketball or anything like that. Even when I went to Santa Monica City College, it's a junior college here on the West Coast. Basketball wasn't my career path. Like I wasn't on this whole idea of I'm going to, be a NBA head coach. Like that was not like in my mind or anything like that. I had to take a one unit class, and it's kind of funny how like some of these things, your paths kind of go in different ways. And there was this basketball class. I said, okay, that's cool. A one unit class. I'll play basketball 3 times a week in the mornings, take a shower in the locker room, and then get on with my day. Right. And in that class was, it was taught by the assistant coach, Trevor Schickman. And he kind of announced like a week or two into the class, like, hey, the basketball team needs a manager, kind of laid out the duties, laid out what time practice was, and practice was like 2 to 5. Mm-hmm. And of course, like freshman year in college, like I literally had this really weird gap that fit right into practice time. And I was like, all right, well, that'll be kind of cool. Be a fun hobby, be part of the team and see how that goes and things like that. And, like 7 months in, I was just kind of hooked. I was like, all right, I need to be a basketball somehow. And from that evolved, went from there. I actually didn't even transfer immediately to USC. I transferred to UC Irvine, and worked for the basketball team there. Like I went, met with the coaching staff and see if they needed managers. By, pure luck, they did. Got to be a manager there for a little bit. Then one of our assistant coaches left to go to USC and wanted me to go with him. It took me a year later, but I ended up finally going. I became like a super senior because of all of these transferring opportunities, these things. And I ended up at USC and, worked under Henry Bibby. And, he got let go while I was there, and Jim Syatt took over. I got to work in two different Division I programs, but one in a Power Five conference, in the Pac-12, and got to see some real talented guys up close.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you had Nick Young, Gabe Pruitt, and I think Taj Gibson might have been the year after you left, right?
Yeah, Taj was gone. I had Nick and Gabe their freshman year.
Yep.
And then I left. Coincidentally, my senior year at USC, I went back to Santa Monica College to be the lead assistant for Trevor, who was an assistant when I was there. Coach Mack was a legendary coach in the West Coast in the junior college circuit, had retired, and Trevor took over. And, I was kind of just tired of being a manager at that point, and then jumped into that my senior year. That's kind of really the story of how I got into basketball and doing all this.
How different were those roles as student managers between a smaller school like Santa Monica City College and a giant titan like USC?
It's funny. It's not all that different, to be honest. Now, listen, at USC, budget massively different. there are some things that are going to be really different in that sense. At Santa Monica College, I got to do a lot of things, because it's a small staff. It's literally we had, a head coach, 2 or 3 assistant coaches and 2 managers, me and a guy named Julio Lopez, and so we kind of had to do a lot of things and help out as much as we can. And, at the end, you're still doing laundry on the road, whether you're at USC, UC Irvine, or at Santa Monica College, you're still handling all that and handling, you're the equipment guy basically on the road for a lot of these things and dealing with all of that. At USC was a little bit different too, because more staff, a larger equipment room, so like at home, we had a whole equipment room locked up and a lot more gear, and had to be more aware of what you're handing out and whatnot and things like that. And then I got to do more in the office, some of it was You know, here's a, you know, everybody, every program gets a stack of DVDs sent to them from people that are trying to make it in the NBA. Well, it was my job to go through it in case there was a diamond in the rough somehow.
Yep.
There wasn't any, you know, in most of those cases and so on, but you still, somebody goes through it and stuff. And that was my job. And, you know, sometimes helping out the video guy with small projects and things like that. So, you know, it, a little bit higher level at USC, but again, the roles weren't that much different. At the end of the day, it's just constant grinding and handling all the busy work so that your coaches can just go do coaches stuff.
Exactly. Then when you were kind of in that role, were you, you know, planning, you know, I guess, you know, preparing your own coaching philosophy and, you know, watching what they were doing in workouts and developing anything like that?
Yeah. You start kind of picking up what you like, what you don't like, you know, it's funny. A lot of, I don't know if this is other people's experience, a lot of my opinions were like, oh, I don't want to do that. Yeah. You know, it was like, I don't agree with that. Like that, like I had, you know, different sort of stuff, you know, and I would learn a lot of things. I would see things and go, especially because like USC, we were okay, but we weren't making the tournament or anything like that at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, I was seeing stuff that I didn't like. Mm-hmm. And like, hey, if I'm running a program, I'm not going to do it this way, or I'm going to do this. Or you're picking up small things from coaches. Drills are drills. Mm-hmm. You learn drills all the time. You see it. You're always trying to find creative stuff and things like that. And, you know, you just kind of, you're always developing your philosophy. You know, it's almost like your upbringing. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're going through basketball, you know, you're these coaches, you're picking up what you're seeing. You know, Trevor gave me the best advice ever. He's like, yo, you can't be these guys. You know, you got to be you. Just take and learn from them and see what they do. But you got to craft it and make it yourself somehow. And, you know, that's actually advice I've taken even beyond basketball. But, like, it's an important thing. You start to kind of pick up stuff. But if you're just trying to copy and mimic these other coaches, you're gonna fail miserably because that's just not who you are if that's not your nature. You know, and I think that was a big lesson I took away. And then, yeah, as you know, I had binders and drills and plays I liked and so on and stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely.
So you were developing the video coordinator skills there pretty much from the beginning with those student manager jobs. That's pretty awesome there.
For sure.
Nick Young, any stories from practice? I mean, like you said, you got to see freshman Nick Young. Everybody kind of knows him. He was a mixtape legend going into USC too. So he wasn't an unknown.
Yeah, no, he was one of the top guys. You know, Nick's just a fun kid, yeah. You know, especially then he was literally a kid. He was 18, 19 years old, you know, goofy, always had a smile on his face, you know, kind of deal. I mean, him and Gabe came in and it was really a highlighted part of our run with the program was we were bringing in these top level recruits in LA. You know, I wish I had more, you know, it's just, you know, Nick was a fun kid, man. And jokes nonstop, you know, and plays around and things like that. So, you know, I enjoyed my time with him. It was funny. Cause eventually funny side story is eventually when I'm with the Clippers, which I'm sure we'll get into, you know, he gets traded to the Clippers while I'm there. And I send him a text message going, hey man, welcome, you know, welcome to the team, man. Can't wait to see you again. Da, 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 all that stuff. And he's like super jovial and stuff. And I'm like, that's weird. That's not the Nick I know. The Nick I know would make fun of me. and I thought to myself, I said, oh, he thinks I'm Mo Williams, who is also on the team.
No, so
I text him back. We're like, this is USC Mo, not Mo Williams. Oh, all right, I'll see you when I get back. Like, it was just along those lines. Like,
I'll
just
throw a towel at you.
No. Yeah, it was a very much like, I promise you, he wouldn't have responded had he realized it was USC Mo and not Mo Williams. So that kind of stuff happened a little bit. But yeah, Nick was, you know, Nick is Nick.
That's awesome. Always curious to hear, you know, guys coming up and their college experiences and folks that work close with them as a student manager. Obviously, you know, you probably had you know, closer contact than almost anybody other than the coach on those squads. So like I was saying, you built your video coordinator skills in those student manager jobs. How did you springboard right from USC into, you know, the Clippers down the road there?
Yeah. So it was really, again, it's funny how many like random points that that turn into like actual things in life. You know, I happened to be walking into the office one day and we needed somebody to drive one of our senior players, Jeff McMillan, you know, to this workout at St. Monica's High School in Santa Monica for, you know, he was kind of going to get looked at by some NBA guys. It was an NBA level workout, and just walked in the office. They're like, Mo, what are you doing? I said, I have time. They're like, can you drive Jeff? I said, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I dress up in the typical coach's gear, little khaki shorts, SC polo, looking, yeah, trying to look professional or whatever. We joke and call it the video coordinator outfit now. It's just basketball shorts now instead of khaki shorts, but same concept. Yeah. Drive over there, start watching this workout, and it's a workout with some draft prospects. You have a bunch of coaches in the stands. It's a small gym. I'm there with my notepad taking notes, again along the lines that we're talking about. I'm writing down drills. I'm going like, oh, this is pretty interesting stuff here. And it's being run by Neil Olshey and being run by Tim Gergerich. Now everybody kind of knows Neil Olshey because now that he's a big GM, not a lot of people may know the name Tim Gergerich. You know, he is the godfather of player development. Like, he's really kind of one of the first player development coaches out there. Had time with, you know, was an assistant with Jerry Tarkanian at UNLV, you know, has made his way to the league, has been around tons of NBA players and things like that. He's you know, old dude, but super nice. They're running these workouts, and then Neil just kind of walks up to me and says, hey, one of my guys didn't show up. Can you help out and just play some dummy defense? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, just playing dummy defense and being part of the helping out throughout the entire drills through the workout. Workout ends. Neil comes up to thank me. I'm like, hey man, like, can I come back? And he's just like, I can't pay you. I'm like, no, you don't have to pay me. I don't want my, I just want to come back and watch. And if you need help, I'll help and all that stuff. And Neil was like, sure, you know, and along those lines. So, you know, he's like, we're working out tomorrow at 9 a.m. Cool. Showed up 9 a.m., was there, ready to go, you know, continued to help out. Eventually, you know, I went from the draft into working out guys, you know, Carlos Boozer and Jason Capone. This is also how old I am, guys. you know, we're working out there regularly. We're having other guys come in. So this kind of became my entire summer. Was working out these guys, and every now and then a random guy would come in. We had Kobe Bryant came into the gym one time, and the intensity level ramps up, you know, 10 notches when Kobe comes in for a workout. And just kind of seeing all of these things. So I was developing a relationship with Neil, with Coach Gerg, and everything was kind of going like that. Then I'm going into my senior year at USC. And that's when I go become an assistant at Santa Monica College, go through that whole season. Then I'm trying to figure it out here, getting a little bit old, kind of forgetting. At the same time, this is random too. I'm doing ball boy stuff for the Lakers in the preseason. The Lakers would play these games in Fresno and San Diego, Bakersfield, Vegas, and they would let me and my friends come in and be the ball boys for those games. They wouldn't bring their normal ball boys. I don't know why, but whatever. We would get to do that stuff. And it turned out that season after I had graduated, they were like, hey, we're short for guys at some of the Staples Center games. So sure enough, I go to Staples Center and do the ball boy stuff. And again, another just lucky random. Oh, sorry guys, I gotta backtrack here for a second.
Oh, that's fine.
After that first summer, Neil gets promoted from being an assistant for the Clippers to director of player personnel. And this is a funny moment, and it'll make sense when I come back to the other story. I call Neil to congratulate him, all right? And I'm just like, oh, that's great, congratulations. And he answers, and he's like, clearly didn't have my phone, again, my number locked in, because he just answers. And I'm like, hey, Neil, it's Mo, man. Hey, congratulations. He's like, hey, I'm in a meeting. I'll call you back. And then hangs up. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I got scared. I was like, man, I shouldn't have called him. Not that I could know he was in a meeting or anything like that. All that stuff. Anyways, trade text messages, congratulate him, all that fun stuff. Flash forward now to I'm doing this preseason game, and it's Lakers Warriors or something like that. It's a doubleheader. Clippers playing somebody, and then the Lakers Warriors were playing next. And Baron Davis asked me to go get him a couple of chicken fingers, a couple orders of chicken fingers. I'm like, okay, cool, no problem. You know, great pregame meal for everybody that's curious. Run up to the concession stands. I'm buying like a whole bunch of chicken fingers. And this is like the freshest. This thing's burning my hand. I'm carrying like four or five of these in my arms and running down the steps of the Staples Center. And who do I bump into? It's Neil. And Neil looks at me. He's like, what the hell are you doing here? Because he's literally just seeing a guy who's, you know, worked out with NBA guys, you know, and helping out guys and helping him running down the stairs, wearing some Lakers shirt and carrying a massive amount of chicken fingers. And he's just like, Mo, what are you doing here? And I'm like, oh, well, you know, doing some ball boy stuff for the Lakers. It's like, where have you been? Like, I never hear from you. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I didn't want to bother you or anything like that. And he just kind of looks at me like, you're an idiot. Like, look, I might have something for you. Give me a call in a month. And he gives me his card. And I'm like, okay, cool. I run in, hand bearing the chicken fingers and everything like that, put the card away, get home that night from the games, and dated reference again. Going with Swingers, you know, like the scene from Swingers. I take the business card and I count off 30 days and I put it on the calendar and make sure I get it, you know. So literally 30 days pass. I call Neil, no answer, of course. Leave a voicemail. Hey Neil, it's Mo, you know, from St. Monica's, all that stuff. Give me a call, you know. Let's, you know, you told me to call you, all that stuff. Never calls back. You know, like a week later, I get a text message from him. Hey, email this guy. There's an internship in the video room. I want you to check it out. You know, and so, of course, I email Ramis Posado, who's the head video coordinator for the Clippers at the time. That's how I get an internship with the Clippers. And it's mainly personnel, draft, mainly working with the front office, not even so much on the coaching side and scouting. But that becomes my in into the NBA. But if we were keeping track, that's three different random intersection points that have led to big changes for me.
No, it seemed like it was all like meant to be. And, you know, like during that time, you know, when you're working in the front office, kind of what were your duties during that? What did your day look like?
Yeah. You know, I would come in the mornings. It was literally, we would have a list of guys that our front office guys were going to go scout and they wanted to see video of. I mean, this is pre-synergy, pre a lot of internet stuff. I mean, this is things like we have the game on DVD, we're putting the this and that, and I'm breaking it down off of that. It's a whole different environment, and we're breaking down, you know, just game after game after game, you know, of different prospects, you know. I mean, the like everything, international, professional, I mean, college guys, we're just keeping track. I can't even remember a lot of the names I was going through, but, you know, it became a big run of just constantly turning out those things, making edits, then putting those edits on DVDs and delivering them to our, you know, scouts, our, you know, player development, you know, Neil, at the time, Gary Sachs was there. Jason PM Betty, like just a number of guys just giving DVDs out, you know, and the G League was just getting going. So G League games and stuff like that. So really my job was just watch a crap ton of college games and break them all down to the point where I can't watch college basketball anymore.
Believe you, man. Golly. Oh,
that's amazing. That was an interesting time for the Clippers too. That was the era with Livingston, Brand, McGetty, Kamen. Like they had a lot of promise and it looked like they were kind of turning it around. And then obviously Livingston injury kind of put a pin in that and, you know, guys got older.
I mean, I was there for the Livingston injury. Like it's still one of the more horrific things I've ever seen. Now to kind of go back to it a little bit, I won't go into details of the actual injury, but you know, when you're watching in the video room, you're watching, you have a high angle feed, which is not something that's televised, right? And that's something that we usually use to break down. And you have the TV feed. And we sometimes use the TV feed to break down the games because we're breaking down these games live, but the coaches kind of like the TV feed a little bit more. So the high angle feed comes in quicker than the TV feed for whatever reason. Science can, we'll just leave it at that. You know, and I'm the only one in the game, in the video room. There's a couple of us watching the high angle feed. Everybody's watching the TV feed. And I just noticed that Sean goes up for a layup and then comes down weird. And I'm like, that didn't look right. And I just say out loud, like, something weird just happened, guys. And they're like, what? I'm like, you'll see. And we, and then like within, you know, 3 seconds after I say that, we see it. And that's when just everybody just goes, oh no, like freaks out. Obviously we go to commercial break and stuff, but the high angle feed doesn't, and we get a view of everything. And it's just one of the worst injuries, I think, in close to history. We've seen some real bad ones, but that's the one where I was there in person and was like, this is nasty, and changed the kid's career. I mean, one of the nicest human beings out there. I'm glad he was able to rehab and get everything back to the point where he was able to continue to have an NBA career, but it's brutal, man.
Yeah. He got a couple of rings, thankfully, in the end there. And, you know, he got that mid range back, which I love out of him. But so you moved, you were on the Clippers there for a few years. Did that kind of shift your allegiance? You said you were, you grew up, your sister as a Lakers fan. Were you also a Lakers guy?
I grew up as a Laker fan. I grew up as a Laker fan. Absolutely. But once you start working in the NBA, you're rooting for the team that's signing your checks, you know, and you begin to hate the Lakers, especially when you're the Clippers, because they're across the hall. Everybody, listen, you know, I've had people even say to me now, go ahead, like, you know, it's never going to be, LA's never going to be a Clipper town. I go like, yeah, that wasn't the point, you know, but it was like, they weren't trying to be, you develop kind of a disdain for them when you're working for the Clippers. In that sense, because there's that whole little brother, big brother kind of relationship sort of thing. And then the city's always kind of on top of you.
You must have played some good defense in those workouts with the NBA dudes for Neil Olshey, you know, give you a call those years later and be like, hey, man.
Oh, no, like those games, they just wanted me to play dummy defense, just pretend to play defense, you know, and things like that. But they were definitely trying to make sure I, especially early on when they didn't know me, make sure I didn't hurt anybody, right? Like I was trying to prove yourself or anything. No, you just gotta just sort of let the guys go. It was just basically be a cone. A cone could have done the same thing I could have done. would have been the whole thing. But yeah, it was we had a good run. Those were some fun workouts.
Yeah, cone can't break down video as good, at least though. So that's good. But so you moved on to the Spurs from there. How'd you kind of make the connection with the Spurs? You ended up on the Pop regime. Unfortunately, you missed the one window really where the Spurs didn't get a ring.
I know. What the hell? That was my chance.
It's an awesome team though.
it's interesting, and this goes back kind of like to my UC Irvine days. I worked a ton of basketball camps, and one of the camps I worked with, was in Cal Lutheran. It was a terrible basketball camp. I think the checks bounced that they gave everybody, that they paid. It was a terrible camp. There was a lot of fraudulent stuff there. But the best thing that came away from that was I met James Borrego, who at the time was working at the University of San Diego. Eventually, and this was long before I even had it. I thought I was going to get a chance at the NBA. JB eventually becomes the video coordinator for the Spurs. And, just through that relationship, when these guys come into town and play your teams, when I'm with the Clippers, he's seeing me with the Clippers and we're like, oh my God, like, yo, we catch up for a minute. So JB kind of knows me and things like that. And we continue to talk and stuff like that. And then when there was an opening, he just called me up and said, hey, we got this thing here. It's a 2-year program. The first year is an internship, the second year is full time. I'd like to bring you in. You need an interview with Mike Budenholzer for the position and things like that. And we'll go from there. And luckily enough, you know, I interviewed with Coach Bud. You know, he asked me a question. He's like, you're full-time with the Clippers. Why are you coming to – why would you want to come to San Antonio and be an intern for the first year? It's like, well, you know, full-time with the Clippers or work for Pop, like, it's kind of a no-brainer. I want to get that experience. And, you know, and Bud was all cool, and Bud brought me – they brought me in, and I got 2 years there. And, you know, the second year was the year we should have won a championship, run into Memphis in the first round. Won eight matchup, and Memphis beats us. You know, Manu missed game one because he's injured. I'm never going to let it go. I have to make sure everybody knows everything that happened there. You know, Manu got hurt, I think, the second to last game of the season, misses game one of the series. We lose, and, you know, we just weren't able to figure it out from there. And Memphis, they had our number that year. And I still firmly believe, had we won that series, I would have had a championship. But of course I don't, and I missed out on the run. You know, they had just won one a couple of years before I got there, and then they won one a couple of years after I left. So just unfortunate timing for me.
Yeah, if it's any consolation, that might be the best Memphis team in recent years or recent decades. I mean, that was probably the best basketball play Zebo's played in his career for that playoff stretch there. He was outrageous against you guys. I remember watching those games. And just
being, he was unbelievable.
Exactly, and also unstoppable.
it also led to me having to play Memphis for the next three playoffs. I go from San Antonio. So unfortunately, the second year of the program for San Antonio, normally the guys in my position the second year get to move on to another team as a head video coordinator. So like somebody gets a job and you go with them. Mm-hmm. But timing, again, not great. It's the lockout. So there are no opportunities, you know, and San Antonio lets me go. I'm working for Team Australia during this stretch as well. So, you know, there's kind of weird stuff going on. I come back and I get an opportunity to work for the Clippers again. The Clippers had replaced me when I left. The guy who replaced me left to go to Toronto. And that opened up an opportunity. And, you know, I had to interview with Vinny Del Negro. Neil was there now as the general manager. Neil was all in on, hey, we got to bring Mo back. Like, that's our guy. He knows us. Like, I know his work ethic. Mo's got to come back. Ramos Posado is still the head video coordinator there. He's all for bringing me back. I just got to meet Vinny. And, you know, of course, the first thing you do in that instance is you call Pop. And you call Pop and you go, Coach Pop, you know, firstly, you have the conversation, and Pop's just hilarious because the first thing he says to me is like, man, how come nobody ever calls me just to see how I'm doing? All of you guys just call me because you need something and need me to do something for you. None of you call to just say, hey, Pop, how you doing? Like, good point. How you doing, Pop? You know, 2 minutes of that, then I tell him I'm interviewing with Vinny. You know, can you make a call for me in that instance? And Pop's like, absolutely, go ahead and get, but you have to give me a call afterwards. Let me know how the interview goes. No problem, Coach Pop. I'm happy to do it. I go in, and at the same time, I'm interviewing with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Danny Ferry actually was pushing to get me an opportunity elsewhere. A lot of stuff with the Spurs, a lot of stuff was happening behind the scenes for me that I didn't even know. There's probably even more phone calls that went on that I didn't even know about on my behalf from the Spurs organization trying to help me find a place. And, you know, Danny Ferry had reached out to Cleveland saying, hey, you guys should reach out to our guy, you know, Mo. He would be a good add to the team, to the program. And so I have an interview with David Griffin later that day. I go to meet Vinny. I come in. Listen, I kind of already feel like I'm going to get the Clipper job, but you don't leave anything up for chance. I come in completely dressed in a suit, the non-video coordinator outfit, right? The you know, come in a suit, bring my resume, everything. I'm not taking anything for granted. I sit down with Vinny and Ramen. A few minutes later, Vinny kicks Ramen out of the room because he wants to talk to me. you again, get the feel for me. And you know, we're having a conversation and he just kind of says to me, hey, like goes one, Pop called me and said, you know, he's really good. And if anything else, he's at least pretty fun to have around. You know, even if he's just okay, he's going to be fun to be around. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Vinny's like, you know, and Pop basically just said like, you have to hire him. Mm-hmm. So there was that. And then, you know, Vinny just kind of looks at me and goes, I know you have an interview with Cleveland later today. You know, what can I do to get you to cancel the interview? And this is kind of probably stupid on my part, mm-hmm. but I look at him and I go like, are you aware of the deal David Beckham just signed in France? Now, David Beckham had just signed an 18 million, 18 month contract. So basically $1 million a month.
Yeah,
you know, and he just looks at me and starts laughing. Like, if you got that in your pocket, I'll cancel all interviews. Like, I'm here, and he just starts laughing. And the point I really wanted to make more than anything about that is, I wanted to interview with Cleveland, even if I wasn't really going to necessarily move to Cleveland. I mean, I'm from LA, I'm in LA, and I'm not going to deal well in cold weather.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to network a little bit. I wanted to make sure David Griffin knew who I was. I was going to present myself in the same way I presented, you know, myself to Vinny, in that serious about it and not going to take it for granted. And, you know, so he understands. So I go take, you know, Vinny's like, cool, no problem. You know, I leave the facility, call Pop. Pop asks me how it goes. I tell him everything. I tell him the Beckham thing, and he just starts laughing, calls me an idiot, which is probably a dumb thing to do if you want to blow the interview. But I just felt comfortable enough in that instance. And then, you know, I meet with David Griffin and God, I'm so bad. I can't remember the video coordinator's name, Vance. I met with Vance over Skype, mm-hmm. and you know, we're talking and listen, Griff says the first thing he says to me, he goes, look, man, I know you interviewed with the Clippers. Like, why would you leave LA for Cleveland? And I kind of look at him. I go like, no, I go, listen, everything I've heard about how the organization is ran is really positive. So, you know, I don't have an offer, you know, from anybody, you know, I got to weigh everything, you know, and see what the opportunities are. I can't just say I got this, so I'm not going to look at the other opportunities. You guys might present a different opportunity that's more interesting and could lead to more things for me down the road. So, you know, I wanted to meet with you guys and see what you guys have to offer along those lines. And, you know, Griff was great. And, you know, he kind of just told me straight away, he said, listen, we're not sure if this is going to be a full-time gig or if this is going to be an internship. And at this point, I'm not taking an internship. I already did it with the Clippers, did it with the Spurs, not taking an internship anywhere else at this point. At this point, I need to be full-time. And, you know, Grifter says, don't make any decisions. Just give me till the morning. So no problem. So Griff, you know, and we end the Skype call and Griff calls me and he must not have realized LA time and Cleveland time. So it's 9 a.m. Cleveland time. It's 6 a.m. West Coast time. And my cell phone's going off. And, you know, it's one of those things where you pop out of bed, you see the name David Griffin. You're like, okay, try to sound awake. You know, you don't want to do the hello, you know, like you'll do with some of your friends, like, oh, shut up, leave me alone or whatever. But like, yeah, I jump out of the bed. I'm like, hey, Griff, you know, like just trying to pretend as much enthusiasm as if I've been up for 3 hours already, got to work out, like I'm just popping out of bed. And Griff's like, oh, man, like my bad. I just realized the time difference. So clearly I failed because he could tell I was still asleep. He's like, hey, I just wanted to let you know we're probably going to go with an internship. It's like, I thought you were great. I think you should just take the Clipper job. So sure enough, I just text, you know, Ramen with the Clippers going like, hey, man, what time you want me in the office, you know? And that day I started with the Clippers, and that's kind of the end of the thing. But there was just so many lessons in that, because it was networking.
Yeah.
It was, you know, there's an important aspect in, you know, like you also don't necessarily know who's working behind the scenes for you. You know, Chad mm-hmm. Forcier, player development coach with the Spurs, who I at the time didn't think really liked me that much, you know, was calling Mike Brown with the Lakers going like, yo, you got to hire Mo. Like, he's right there. You know, everybody was doing things on my behalf. R.C. Buford was trying to get me an interview with Texas Tech. You know, there, everybody was working on my behalf behind the scenes. It was something I greatly appreciate about the organization, part of what makes the Spurs organization so great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I ended up in all those spots. You know, a lot of it was networking, some of it's luck and things like that. But the most important thing people got to understand is luck only takes you so far. You got to work.
Yeah.
And you got to bust your ass. I hope I am allowed to.
No.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. 100%.
But you got to really work. It's not a thing of people got to look at you and go, yo, man, this dude grinds. Like, one of the reasons why Neil wanted me was because I was a manager, because he knew that I was going to grind, because that's what you do as a student manager. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a thankless job, you know, and same for being a video coordinator. The only time they notice you is when the video screws up, you know, it's along those things. So, you know, it's an important thing of I got lucky. I got a lot of connections, but a lot of that was because I worked my ass off to get there. And once you get there, you have to understand something. You have to work doubly hard to stay there.
Yeah, exactly. And you're talking networking too. Like, you know, just for people hearing this and, you know, seeing like the windy road with that, did you have to what was the follow-up process like in developing that relationship so that you can go ahead and ask them to make calls for you?
Yeah. You know, it's along the lines of, you know, just first off being normal. Like, the one thing is, don't ask somebody in your first conversation to do something for you. You know, I mean, you feel it out for sure. But like, if you're meeting somebody for the first time, you can ask for advice and things like that. But like, I've had people come to me saying, hey man, like, can you make a call? And I'm like, bro, I don't know you. Making a recommendation is a big deal. You know, and the thing that's big about it is I am vouching for you. Think about the movie Donnie Brasco. I love movies, guys. So there's always movie references and things like that. But, you know, when Donnie Brasco is being introduced, you know, and Lefty Al Pacino's character is saying, like, look, you know, I either say you're a friend of mine or you're a friend of ours. When I say you're a friend of ours, I am vouching for you. I am telling everybody this dude's okay. You know, and so it matters, you know, and you got to kind of deliver. So when Neil brings me in, he's vouching for me with the Clippers, you know, and I got to deliver to make Neil look good, you know, and on top of that, when JB brings me in to interview with Bud and the Spurs, I got to deliver because JB is staking his reputation a little bit on the line, you know, and same thing with when Vinny takes me in, you know, granted Pop comes with a whole lot of weight, right? But like at the same time, Pop is saying, yo, he's a friend of ours, you know, and you got to take that very important. So I'm very careful with my recommendations. I don't make a lot.
Yeah.
And I'll give people advice, but I got to really know you and know, hey, if I recommend you, you're not going to embarrass me. And maybe it's selfish along those lines and things like that, but I'm not, it's too important in that I am basically saying you're a friend of ours.
Yeah.
And that matters.
Yeah,
and you're watch Donnie Brasco.
Yeah. Your reputation can be everything in the league, really. I got a couple of questions about referencing and vouching for people in your relationship with Pop, like you alluded to, and the kind of crossover time you had with Team Australia and with Pop Spurs squad. Two guys that I was thinking about, Tiago Splitter ended up a Spur during your tenure. Do I have that right?
Yes.
And also Patty Mills, you know, I think it was mostly because of the lockout, but he was playing in China. He was playing for the Melbourne Tigers for a second, but then he coincidentally ended up on the Spurs. Did you have any sort of like put in the bug in Pop's ear when you were with Team Australia? Because I know he played well in those 2012 Olympics too.
I didn't have to. It was Brett Brown, who's obviously the assistant coach. And in 2012, I was with the Clippers. I was trying to get him out. was trying to get Joe Ingles on the Clippers in 2012. Nice. You know, it's along those lines, you know. I was with Tiago with San Antonio my second year. So I had 1 year with him. I still actually trade messages with him from time to time. But I think, you know, you keep an eye on it. I was lucky. With the Team Australia stuff, Brett Brown decided they had lost their third assistant in 2010. He had taken a job at St. Mary's College, and that was going into the World Championships in Turkey. Now, Brett was having me do some side projects for him for Team Australia, and which was great because he was giving me cash on the back end of everything, you know, and edit was like, I was making some extra cash. Like, it was great. Why not? And you know, he decides, hey, like, I want to bring you with me to Australia to be my video coordinator there. I helped a lot. I also screwed up a ton there because it's basically like camping with video equipment. Like my first day, I had completely forgot about the different voltages and blew my digital converter. And that kind of like, I was carrying a 15 pound massive machine that was useless at that point. Because I literally didn't change the voltage. But I had a great experience in that I got to learn so much more coaching and stuff, and got to do a lot more there with Team Australia, but I got to watch a lot of guys. And then again, keeping track of that stuff and looking at Patty, we were like, yo, Patty's an NBA player. You know, it was a no brainer to us, you know, and, you know, the lockout was weird for everybody, you know, and, you know, especially players. Once they kind of came back, you know, like Brett was, it didn't take much, you know, and Pop trusts Brett. Again, it's your word, right? Like Pop knows and Pop watches the games, you know, and sure enough, he, you know, he becomes a Spur and becomes a great Spur for what, almost 10 years at that point, like, or however long he's been. I know he just left for Brooklyn, but you know, it's been a real important deal for the organization.
Yeah, Patty's one of my favorite underrated hoopers out there. I think that Brooklyn's getting a steal with him for sure. But when you were with Team Australia, did you have the opportunity to kind of like sit behind the bench thing during those Olympics? Because they lost in the quarterfinals to Team USA in those Olympics. Did you get to see the Kobe show and Carmelo and LeBron up close for that one?
No, not so much. You know, I was in the locker room trying to figure out how to break these games down live, which I actually, unfortunately, never was really able to pull off for Brett. But, you know, it was one of those things. First off, we were in that game against Team USA until Kobe goes off. I just want everybody, again, like, I won't let these things go. We were in this game. It took Kobe going off for them to really advance. Now, granted, we probably weren't going to win the game, but you know, it was still a real good fight for the national team there. And I got to see a lot. And what I got to do is a lot more coaching on the practice court, which is something I didn't get to do a lot of in San Antonio. Obviously, I'm not coaching Tim, Manu, or Tony. I'm not going to tell them not what to do, you know, or anything like that. And so it, but I got, you know, Brett empowered me a lot, you know, and Brett pulled me aside very early in the process in 2010. You know, he's like, listen, you're here as one of the coaches. Like, I know you're the video guy, but you're one of the coaches too. He's like, you can't be quiet throughout meetings. You know, if you have an opinion, you got to say it. And he stressed it very importantly. And he just said, 80% of what you say is going to be wrong, or we're not going to do, or we're I'm going to disagree with, or whatnot. But that 20% can win us a game. Yeah. That 20% can be a big difference, you know, for us going forward and how we can do things. And there were small things, like small victories I would win. You know, we were talking with our team manager, Nick Mercer, great dude, and God, he had one of the toughest jobs organizing everybody's schedules and all of these things. This guy was unbelievable as a manager, and he wasn't a student manager or anything like that. Like, he high level operations manager. You know, we're sitting through and running through the game day rotations with everybody, and I kind of just looked at Nick, and this is a funnier thing because I think with my stomach more often than not. You know, I kind of looked at Nick and I go like, hey, man, like, the guys are eating lunch, team meal at noon, and we're doing a game at 7, and they're not eating again till after the game. Like, we have to do a snack or something at 3 or 4 before we leave for these guys so they have stuff. Huge win, right? Like, everybody was like, no, that's like, Yes, that's part of the 20%. That's why you got to talk. Yep. And that was more because, like, I just want a free meal. But that was, you know, but that was along those lines when you look at it, you know, with Brett, there were opportunities where, like, Brett would look and go, like, guys, what do you think we should run to start the game? And I used to be like, yo, the first three games, first three plays, we need to run this because we'll get buckets out of those. You know, and Brett would kind of look at it, listen to my reasoning and go like, yeah, no, he goes like, that makes sense. Let's go. And, you know, I don't think we got three straight buckets, but I know we scored at least twice on them and just empowered me. Brett just kind of really gave me that ability of just like, go coach, you know, and trust me. So I grew a lot in that run with Australia, just along those lines. Again, I'm completely blessed and lucky. I got to go to the Olympics, you know, like I got to hang out in the Olympic Village. I got to kind of explore. I got to watch Usain Bolt run track, you know, in the coaches section, you know, just a whole bunch of great stuff there, but it was a lot of work and it was a ton of work, but I learned so much through that run. And, you know, again, just getting to see everybody up close is just a whole other deal.
Yeah, that's a very close-knit Team Australia team. Like you're saying, getting a free meal out of it. Did you ever get a free couple of cervezas out of it with the boys? You know, you got Ingles, Deli, Baines.
I got a great story for you. So in 2011, and they party. Let me just be honest.
They're still partying and
they've earned it. And they've earned it.
Yeah.
2011, we just beat New Zealand. Three games in a row, we've qualified for the Olympics. And so I'm sitting with all the coaches at a restaurant. Brett just took us all out to dinner, and Brett, very generous, you know, with taking everybody out and stuff, took the whole coaching staff. We're celebrating. They're having cigars. I don't, it makes me sick. I don't know how to smoke a cigar. I'm an idiot. Whatever. But my little Australian cell phone just vibrates. So you buy like a little burner phone, right, in Australia. And it just starts vibrating. And I'm like, put it down. Vibrates again, put it down. Vibrates for like the third or fourth time. And Brett's just like, Mo, they're not going to stop calling you until you answer. So I answer, and it's our team captain, Matt Nielsen. And Matt's just like, Moe, we're outside. They're outside the restaurant we went to, not the hotel or anything. They knew where we went. And they're literally like, we're outside. You're coming out with us tonight. We're all flying out the next day, and I'm dying to go home. I was in San Antonio all season, basically came to LA for a week, hopped on a flight, was in Australia for 3 months. You know, and we're going to go right into training camp. I get like a week window to kind of relax at home and then go back, you know, see my family in LA and then go back to San Antonio. Mm-hmm. And Nelly's like, we're going out tonight. And I got a morning flight. We're out all night. I mean, these dudes out all night. I was watching it, and it was just a ton of fun. The stories there stay there, and things like that. But it was just a great night. But just the camaraderie with those guys. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, from day one, they just accepted me as their own. Hey, Mo's with us. Wow. You know, and they were all in, and all the Australian guys always made sure I was taken care of, you know, in between camps and things like that. Hey, what are you up to? Hey, we're doing dinner here. Come with us, you know, and stuff like that. Like, it was, the camaraderie with that group is tighter than any NBA team I've been a part of. You know, it was just, they were all completely tight and everything, you know, from Matt Nielsen, who most people don't know the name, but Patty Mills, Joe Ingles, Dellavedova, Aaron Baines, the list goes on and on. Was just a great experience to see that up close.
Definitely. I mean, you see it still resonating today with that. Yeah. You know, team camaraderie there. They're still, you know, they beat the US this year somehow as a bunch of aging vets with that group.
But they won their first medal. This is the thing that's most important, is they've won their first medal in men's Australian basketball history. We obviously don't see it because we're here in the States, but I know how important it was for those guys.
Yeah.
To win. Even the bronze, people just say, oh, it's a bronze, whatever. We take that for granted here in the States. We would crap all over Team USA if they won the bronze, right? Yeah. Team Australia, this was a huge accomplishment for the Boomers. Mm-hmm. And I felt pride for those guys. Like, I was very excited and very happy for the guys that are still there playing. And Matt Nielsen was an assistant coach for that staff. Like, it just a great, great Olympics for that whole crew.
And has that made the game of basketball in Australia, has that grown like down to the grassroots level as far as popularity and, you know, more players coming out of there?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is the NBL is kind of growing a little bit. It's still not quite there. You know, listen, Australia, it's Australian Football League and rugby are probably always going to be one and one A. In Australia, but the league's coming up, you know, it's definitely improving. And the smart thing is you're getting some of these younger guys. Look, LaMelo Ball was there. RJ Hampton was there. You know, I always find it funny when guys will go play in China and things like that. I'm like, go play in Australia, man. It's practically playing in America. They almost speak English. They, you know, the food is the same and things like that. It's a lot easier to get along. I'm sure the money's probably better in China right now, but I think it's on the come up. And I think just winning the bronze medal continues to rise up. And look at some of the guys they have in the pipeline. I mean, I'm not sure when it's going to happen, but Ben Simmons will probably play for the Australian national team at some point. You know, they have Matisse Thybulle there now, you know, like they have guys, Joe Ingles and Patty Mills probably could play the next Olympics if they really wanted to, you know, there's, they have a chance to kind of continue on with this, you know, Josh Giddey, the kid that just got drafted from Oklahoma, you know, there's always a little bit of some Australian flair with these guys, you know, and a player or two that's coming up. So I think, you know, they're in good situation. I think the game will just continue to grow there, but if we're being honest, it'll never top Australian Football League.
Okay. Yeah, that happens. It's unfortunate. I feel like that's a similar kind of vibe with the U.S. with the NFL too. I've always been a basketball first person, but you know, it's that you're not going to beat NFL. It. You can't touch it. In terms
you can't
of
touch it. It's no different than Lakers, Clippers in LA. Just don't try.
Yeah.
Be the NBA. I like the NFL. I'm not a diehard. I'm not or anything like that. It's not going to be like, I got to sit and watch all day Sunday, but like, I like it. It's fun. All right. We'll watch some of these games. But I'm with you. I'm an NBA guy. If an NBA game's on, let me just tell you, I'm probably one of the few people, Super Bowl or NBA game, probably going to watch the NBA game. But, like, that's, you know, I think, but that's just everybody's got a different preference. We're never going to really kind of top the NFL here. You know, and they got a very easy built-in schedule. It's literally almost one day a week.
Yeah.
Sunday, majority of the games.
Exactly.
Plain and simple. NBA, it's a whole season. A lot harder.
Yeah, and consolation prize, like you've demonstrated with your career, basketball has got the global game dominated, at least. There's no NFL over in Australia.
No,
plenty of basketball all over.
That's the beauty of the game, though, globally, right? Like, getting to watch some of these things. I mean, just think about the guys, the top two MVP vote-getters this past year, Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid, came from the global game, right? You know, you have Luka Doncic coming up. Like, you know, the beauty of basketball is it is worldwide, and that's a lot of fun. And I think, like, just going back to the Olympics, when people were really coming at the Team USA, I said, listen, we didn't send our best team, pretty obvious, but I'm also happy because, like, let's have these games be competitive. The world is slowly catching up, you know, and I think that's a sign that we saw in this Olympics with some of the struggles Team USA had. And I think that's a good thing, you know, and a good thing for the game globally.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that is tied, like you say, your video coordinator coming up, it was very different, burning CDs, there wasn't a Google Cloud to Google Drive to share with people and stuff. Wonder how much of that has to do with the YouTube era, and, you know, how much easier it is to access good, you know, tips and drills and stuff for people all over the world. It's probably some sort of a correlation there.
No, and I'm jealous of the video guys now, you know,
right. it's a little easier job.
I mean, now you can just download the game and then break it down. We used to have to break down games live, right? Like, it used to have to be, some of the funnier times we're having to break down games in the video room in Staples Center during a concert, right? And it's like, and listen, it's we're in the depths of the arena, like where the dressing rooms are and stuff. So, like, our room is vibrating, right? And then you had like some of these concert people being jerks going like, yo, you got to close this door. You got to close the door to the video room. Okay, fine. We have servers in there. Do you know how hot it got in there?
Yeah.
And like, it was like a sauna at that point. Like, there were just times I would walk out sometimes being like, somebody would be like, would say my name. I'd be like, what? Like, I'm in a weird tunnel. Like, there, you know, we had to do these because these games had to be done live, you know, and leaving Staples Center at 11:30 at night, you know, after some sort of concert that just happened, or even on the nights when nothing was going, a little bit weird, kind of eerie almost, a little bit. Yeah. I should start making up ghost stories about Staples Center. But just an awkward sort of thing, but it's a lot easier. At the same time, with it being easier, I'm sure they have a lot more demands from coaches asking for more things because they think it's so much easier.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's always the thing. Like, you know, you're kind of at sometimes technology's mercy too, you know, and I know coaches don't always understand that part, you know, so was there ever a time where you were just like freaking out, trying to figure out how to get a job done and you barely got it done, but you know, you guys figured it out?
There are times where, you know, the funny thing, like with some of these coaches, some coaches don't understand fully how much work goes into the video coordinator job.
Yeah.
Right. And like, sometimes a coach will come to me 20 minutes before a coach's meeting and give me a whole bunch of work. And they'd be like, we want it for the next for this meeting. I go like, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. And they would look at me and I'm like, I'm not being lazy. I'm just telling you gave me about 47 hours worth of work and expect me to do it in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just boom, boom, boom. Here you go. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it is. Sometimes it's simple. Sometimes they come to you with some really complicated stuff and things like that. And it's kind of having that expectations. Now, when you talk about errors with technology, I mean, my last year with Doc, we switched to a new editing system. Man, I was terrible. The number of mistakes I had and things and stuff breaking down on me and so on and so forth, just over and over again. Like, you know, Doc let me go at the end of the year and he should have. You got to bring somebody more experienced that knew the video editing software better than I did at that point, because we had switched over. And that's just bad luck in that respect a little bit. But, you know, you just continue to try and continue to bust your butt again along those lines. And, you know, the assistant coaches, some of them are really helpful trying to help and put stuff together and things like that. It's different with everybody you deal with. But you always just got to set the expectations. Like, you can't be a superhero.
Yeah.
You know, if they ask for something that's really much more convoluted, like, look, I want to deliver what you asked for. Yeah. But what you asked for can't be, if I try to give it to you in 20 minutes, it's going to be like 5 clips. Yeah. You want something that's really deep and insightful. You got to give me more time. And having those conversations with coaches and stuff, it makes a big difference in terms of what you're doing. Because you guys know it's communication, everything, you know, and at least they know what to expect and I know what to expect. And from there you build up.
Definitely. Yeah. That, you know, line of communication, like you're saying with Pop, you know, he's a fun guy, a goofy, but good communicator at times kind of thing with, you know, his off the cuff remarks and stuff like you were mentioning. But like you alluded to, you were with Doc. That was the Lob City era. You know, you got like second year, third year. Blake was there. DeAndre Jordan still had his legs. Must have been kind of fun breaking down those films.
I mean, the first 2 years I was there, you know, like I get there after the lockout and then we trade for Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. I like to take credit. I like to say it was because of me, you know, and again, I'm
you
not
blocked the trade to LA. No.
I made the correct trade to LA, is the way I would look at it. But, you know, it was just a ton of fun, a ton of excitement. You know, before we trade for Chris Paul, we're thinking, hey, we're just going to be a scrappy team. We might, you know, if things break right, we might be able to sneak into the playoffs. You know, now we get Chris Paul and all of a sudden we're contenders, which was wrong to have labeled us contenders. It was, we do this in the media a lot, right? Just immediately plug in. Okay, automatic contenders, they got this guy without thinking all of the stuff that goes into it. But it was a ton of fun.
Yeah,
right. The games were great. You know, Chris Paul throwing the lobs. I mean, what Chris and Blake did to Kendrick Perkins on that dunk where he baptized Perkins. I wasn't there for the Mozgov dunk. So the Perkins one I remember, but like, you know, just so many things, you know, DeAndre Jordan dunking all over Brandon Knight, like just so many different types of stuff.
Yeah.
It was a real interesting time with this. And it was an interesting time for the organization that was never really that successful and sustained success. You know, that was the start of it. You know, since then they've made every playoffs but one. You know, I think like there's a thing to it. It was like that was the starting moment, and then we let Vinny go after we lose to Memphis in the playoffs and bring Doc in, and now we're thinking we're going to be champions, you know, and Doc brings in JJ Redick, and we have, you know, Jared Dudley on the team. We have a whole bunch of stuff, and it doesn't quite work out as we had hoped. Now I got let go after that season, but they just never were able to put it together beyond that, mainly because they let me go.
Yeah. They're, you know, like you were saying, they weren't quite used to success. There were some interesting times with the Clippers there. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, and I can totally cut this if you want me to, but, Donald Sterling's kind of reign came to an end. Did you see it? There's always stories of him in the facility or him on the court side saying outrageous stuff or doing outrageous stuff. Did you see any of that kind of, were you at, even as the video coordinator, aware of how dysfunctional that whole thing situation was? Or
we all knew like there was no, here's the biggest thing about the Donald Sterling thing was it was the worst kept secret in the NBA. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody knew he was racist, everybody knew he was misogynistic. His 2006 deposition was published, you know, in a thing, so you heard all of these things. It got to the point to my mother, who doesn't follow sports at all or whatever, is like, is this your boss? And I'm like, there's only 30 of these jobs, Mom. You gotta like, yes, but yeah, I can't take a stand. You know, but it's like it's along those lines. Like we all knew, you know, and then the video came out, and then it became the whole the audio tape came out, and then it became a whole thing. Great for the league, great for the Clippers, really, because it got them Steve Ballmer as an owner. Yeah. It's a whole other deal. They're going to have their own arena soon. It's going to be different in LA for the Clippers relatively soon. But my experiences with Sterling himself are very few and far between. So it's not like I saw anything up front and personal about it. Because again, I was a lowly video guy. I don't even think he knows where the video room was. Like, it was, I don't know if he would understand that. I think, you know, like,
wait, you can edit a video. What?
I think he came into the video room once in the practice facility, and was like, oh, this is the video room. And he started asking me questions of like, well, do you need like a college degree to do this? I was like, no. He's like, well, how about a high school degree? I'm like, you just need to know basketball. Yeah. And I immediately thought to myself, crap. Like somebody's coming in from the Sterling family to do this job now. And I just cost myself, I'm about to get fired because I'm an idiot. I should have made this much more technical and start making up terms. Well, you need the coax and the ZY cable and then connect. Like just start making up stuff. He wouldn't.
Your nephew definitely can't handle it.
Yeah, exactly. type of deal. But I never, luckily I never experienced it with Sterling in that sense. And I'm very happy to not have any of those stories.
For sure.
No, that's awesome. I had to ask, of course, it's always like a, you know, a dark mark kind of in Clippers history and NBA history, but you know, it's interesting to kind of hear the background of that as it ripples still with everything. But yeah, Clippers got in Ballmer. So that was for the best. And from there, like you mentioned, you ended up kind of pivoting career-wise after that video coordinator and Doc, unfortunately, showed you the door. What kind of went into that pivot? You were a recruiter for a little bit, and then you hopped into the media world full head first. What went into that whole development and thought process?
Well, part of my problem that last season with Doc was I think I was burnt out. I mean, listen. I had come off 3 summers in a row working for Team Australia. So it basically was going nonstop for 3 years, you know, and had an off season when Doc came in, but it was also a very stressful one. New coach. You don't know if you're getting fired. You don't know what's going on. Is he bringing somebody in? Like there was a whole bunch of stuff all off season. And I think I just got burnt out. And the other thing too, is under Vinny, I felt like I was very close to being, if somebody left, being promoted to get on the bench. Like that was an important thing with Doc, and it completely within his right. And what every coach should do is he brought in a bunch of people that he trusted that he wanted to bring with him. Unfortunately, that dropped me way down the ladder. And I felt like, okay, I don't really want to start over again. So for me, I was just like, this is probably my last year anyways. So
you know, Doc let me go, which was great because I got severance pay out of it. I was going to quit. Doc let me go, worked out awesome. You know, I had a few opportunities to go to other teams. Neil Olshey had made a couple phone calls on my behalf. And I finally called Neil and just told him, like, hey, man, like, I'm done. I'm done with the NBA. Great run. I appreciate it. It was awesome. All that stuff. So then I go into tech recruiting, which, like, that – God bless all y'all recruiters out there, the staffing firms and all that stuff. That ain't for me.
Yeah.
I'm very bad at that. I was very bad at that. You know, I hung on there for about 2 years. But in that process, that's when I created the jumpball.net. Just because I started to watch the coverage of basketball. You don't see that when you're working necessarily in it. When you're with the team, you are literally just focused on everything about the team. Yeah. You know, I didn't even know what a podcast was. I didn't read as many articles as you would think and things like that. Like, literally was just locked in on the team completely. You know, so I started watching the coverage going like, man, they don't really explain things, you know? And I think I saw a SportsCenter clip where they highlighted a guy getting an open look because somebody didn't make the rotation. I said, but that's the wrong rotation. Like, that guy made the correct move. I think they were highlighting Carmelo Anthony giving up an open corner three. I go like, no, he has to rotate. It's the other guy that needs to rotate. Mm-hmm. Type of deal. And that's when I thought, like, okay, there's something here. Yeah. So I had met with a few people, you know, who in the industry and stuff like that, and they kind of were giving me advice a little bit. And then finally one of them just turned to me and said, like, nobody's gonna just invite you to go do this for them. Like, you just have to go do it. So I made my own website, started out with a terrible domain name. It was literally called Mo's B-ball blog. I didn't know what the hell to name it, right? And then, like, you know, like, it just terrible naming, like, what the hell. Like, you, nobody would take this serious at all. My Trevor, who I used to work with at Santa Monica under, like, he's become an older brother, he still loves it. He still refers to it as the B-ball blog. But, you know, I change it to the jumpball.net, create the website, start writing. I am not very good at editing, grammar, all of those things. So, like, if you go read some of the stuff on the jumpball.net, you'd be like, this dude writes at like a third grade level, and you're probably correct. God bless all the copy editors now who helped me out. And from that, just kind of built, you know, and was working with recruiting firm while doing this, did some freelance recruiting for a little bit after that, you know, and I've been lucky again to continue to build this, but I'm just sort of trying to bring a little more basketball to the conversation sometimes. As much fun the drama is in the NBA, I think sometimes we get too focused and get too far away from the game, where I think the game is just great.
Yeah.
And the strategies, and everybody just thinks everybody's playing the same way, when I'm like, no, there's actually a lot of differences that can be highlighted. So I just try to bring that to everybody, and I've been lucky so far. Got to do some stuff with the Washington Post, and then now with Bleacher Report, and then getting to do the podcast with The Athletic. So, you know, but it all started with Mo's B-ball blog, right? And building from that, and a poorly named website, and eventually, you know, the jump ball, then do my own podcast, just try to add stuff.
Exactly. No, and it just seems like, too, you know, you're constantly learning, you know, and that's something that I really appreciate, is like, it's this journey is, you know, there's nothing ever, you know, just linear path, you know, and that's the nice thing, you know, to hear about your story, as well as all the examples, because it's definitely inspired me, you know, and but also seeing kind of the way you've gone after basketball. You know, what would you say, like, is there been somebody, you know, after basketball that, you know, played a huge role, like, kind of influenced you to, you know, kind of go ahead with to start the blog and everything?
I don't think so. Part of it was I didn't want to work a regular job.
Yeah.
I realized I wasn't good at it. It's hard after, you know, before I went into recruiting, when I'm looking at my resume, mm-hmm. it was all basketball jobs. I don't know what the hell I was supposed to do next. I was like, what the hell? What can I do? You know?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of skills that do translate to real world stuff. I just didn't understand. I was like, yo, you know, and at that point, I'd been working at basketball since I was 17, 18 years old. Like, it was trying to figure that stuff out there. I've been lucky having people I can reach out to now But starting out, it was literally just me going out on my own and learning this as I went. I started Twitter with no understanding of what the hell Twitter really was. You know, I didn't have a Twitter account when I was working in the NBA. No, that's not true. I had a Twitter account to find my taco truck. There was a taco truck in LA that would tweet out their locations. And that was why I had the Twitter account. Again, my stomach. I always think with that. So it was along those lines. And so I continued to look for that stuff. And you know, I had to slowly grow on Twitter. Learn Twitter etiquette. How do you do? You don't tag. I hate it. You don't tag people, a massive amount of people, to show them your stuff. If you create good stuff, people will find it. And I've had to slowly grow. I remember when somebody gave me an endorsement and I realized, like, wow, like that matters. Cause all of a sudden I went from like 15 followers to 100 in a night, you know, and had, it's like, oh, I have to turn off my phone. This vibrating every time I get a follower is ridiculous, you know, and change settings. And now it's, you know, slowly growing. It was a process. It was, you know, I remember when I hit 1,000, I remember when I mean, I'm lucky. And I remember when I hit 5,000 and still continue on, you know, one of my really good friends became my 10,000th follower, you know, like he was like, you know, and it's obsessive a little bit and probably a problem, my own issues, but along those lines, I had to grow this organically.
Yeah,
I had to build this organically. Now I'm lucky I have people I can reach out to. And I found people are very friendly in that, you know, like they understand where I'm coming from. And I've been lucky, you know, guys like Howard Beck, you know, super friend, you know, great to me. Sam Amick, Zach Lowe. I've been really lucky with a lot of people. Zach Harper, the people at The Athletic, all of them, you know, Jade Hoy bringing me on the podcast team and things like that. Like, been lucky, but again, it's along those lines. But I also bust my butt. They also know, hey man, like Mo knows what he's talking about. He's serious about these things. He's not going to just kind of shine you on. I'm not going to just try to dunk on people or things like that and stuff. Like, I'm just trying to have, hey, on Twitter, I am going to have a good time and make some jokes here and there, but like ultimately just want to teach the game.
Yep.
Definitely. Yeah, we certainly appreciate that. You know, there's a certain nuance and art to breaking down kind of the analytics, but more of like the strategy analytics, not the like necessarily like, you know, more threes equals more points thing. But you know, like you're talking about defensive rotations, pick and roll rotation, stuff like that. Like there's definitely a nuance and talent that you have to making the common man kind of get that point across and understand, you know, what exactly is going down out there.
It's hard because like not a lot of people will get excited about a random screen that didn't really lead to a shot, but like I will sit there and be like, oh, I gotta highlight this, you know. And it's a level of those things. And you know, to kind of touch on what Andrew said earlier though about learning, I want to learn every year. I want to add stuff. I did writing for, added a podcast and learned how to create a podcast on my own. Was poorly produced, but still learned how to try to do that. You know, last year I added doing a lot more videos, doing this One Mo Thing video series that I do. This year I'm going to do a whole lot more Twitch and things like that and kind of develop those things. So, you know, it's just constantly trying to add to the repertoire. Cause I think once we kind of slow down and stop and get settled, we're not going to grow. And doesn't matter how old we are, we can continue to grow and learn.
Absolutely. Yeah. We don't want to take up too much of your time here. I know we've kind of hit our wall. So I don't want to leave too far into your day, but
final questions, fellas, let's go.
Yeah, right. Let's get our plugs in. No. Speaking of plugs, the Twitch you just mentioned, where are you going to be on Twitch? Do you have that account set up yet? Or is that still kind of in the works?
I was doing it during the playoffs, a post game show pretty much after almost every playoff night with edits and showing things. And stuff like that. I'm gonna switch formats and do probably more of a late morning kind of show. You can catch it at @MoDeKeel_NBA on Twitch. Just follow me on Twitter. I constantly tweet about it. You'll get the link at some point. You know, I'm actually, when I'm done with this conversation, which will be moot once this comes out. But I'm hopping on my stream and going to start doing kind of season previews and things like that. So, it's fun. I think it's a great way of talking with people and adding the element of just breaking more stuff down. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, you get a little different demographic with Twitch too. I know it's more of the young kids thing hopping on the
yeah,
Twitch.
Yeah, I get made. I barely get on the time on there. Like on my own yeah. stream, somebody will mention like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, what does that mean? What that word means.
You know, so there's opportunities to crack jokes during the chat and me just going, no idea.
Nice. So yeah, you're still writing a bit for NBA analyst for Bleacher Report, so people can read your work on there. You kind of are just doing that on instead of the Jump Ball now, right?
Yeah,
the Jump Ball's kind of been on pause.
Yeah, the Jump Ball is on pause. I keep the site active. You never know. Maybe one day I have to return to it. But it's you know, I'll be honest, they're paying me.
Yeah, there you go.
Like that was the point. That was the point of the Jump Ball. Exactly, you know, was. Right. The website was, let me get my stuff out there. It's almost a profile of its own. That was the point of me starting my own podcast, was showing people I can talk about this as well. The whole point of me doing the One More Thing videos and doing Twitch is showing more of what I can do. It's adding to my skill set, you know? So the Jump Ball probably isn't as active. Every now and then I think, like, you know, if a pitch of mine gets crushed or something, I'm like, I'm just going to go put it on the Jump Ball. But then I usually get another thing back to go right. And I'm like, okay, I'll write that then. And, you know, so, you know, got to pay the bills.
Exactly. No, I'm all in with that for sure. So, no, we really appreciate you coming on, letting us know, man. That's awesome.
Really? I actually have one more question. I just remembered it from is that a squirt bottle from back in the man today? For folks who can't see, Mo's got a classic sideline Gatorade squirt bottle with him today.
Actually, it's I somehow ended up on some sort of list with Gatorade that put that at an event, and they gave me like two of these bottles, and I need to drink a lot more water. So I was like, so this has become my vehicle to make sure I'm constantly drinking enough water these days. So and the squirt bottle comes in heavily on Twitch, you know. that's my water bottle there.
Oh yeah,
I have a lot of towels though. I've taken from the a lot of Gatorade towels.
USC I've taken towels, over the
definitely did that.
Yeah, free is always good, and you know, anything that can kind of bring you back to the old college days never hurts. No, that's great. So folks, definitely follow you on the Bleacher Report, or follow Mo on the Bleacher Report you know, blog, and the Athletic NBA Show. Are you doing any other pods, or are you kind of just I see you almost, what are you, 3 or 4 days a week almost on NBA Show?
We do the Daily Ding. Yeah. So I'm on that a couple of times a week, and then Nerder She Wrote, that comes out on Fridays. We'll see. Our schedules haven't come out yet for next season. I think we're in that process. So, but I believe everything will still kind of be relatively the same, and hopefully I'll continue to be on the podcast.
you definitely should be. If not, they're making a mistake like Doc now. But no, I appreciate, like I said, we appreciate you for coming on. I'm a big fan. I think you had a great element to that, the Athletics NBA Show and the pods that you do. So definitely appreciate it.
I appreciate that. And if I could just leave everybody just one kind of piece of advice.
Yeah.
Yo, don't wait for an invitation. Like, the barrier of entry now is so much lower than it used to be that you can go do it, you know, and you know, just people will gravitate to good content.
Yeah.
You know, be yourself, do good content, be authentic. And I think people will find you that way. And from that it develops, but there are no shortcuts.
Yeah.
Listen, I worked in the NBA. I thought I was going to get an opportunity within 1 year. You know, I'm still freelance at all these places. Like, I don't even have the full-time position yet. Right. So there are no shortcuts. It takes time to develop all of this. So don't be too hard on yourself. Like, there are times I thought something was going to be big, ended up not being very big. There are times I thought something was going to be small, ends up blowing up, and you're like, okay, well, all right. You know, it's just keep putting out good content. Don't be hard on yourself if something doesn't blow right away or doesn't work on your timeline. There's a lot of different reasons why it may not work on your time, on the timeline you set. Yeah. But it's just keep grinding on it, and you know, you're gonna get lucky. But if you're lucky, you got to make it pay off by being good.
Yeah, No, that's great advice. That's such great advice. And, you know, I know people will be able to take that right away. And I know I'm taking that because, you know, sometimes be hard on myself. But, you know, really appreciate you saying that and, you know, coming on here and sharing, you know, what you went through and, you know, kind of what you persevered through to make happen, because you definitely made your career happen. And I love that part about not sitting back and getting up and going out there and going for it.
Yeah, best advice. Nobody's going to give you the invitation.
Yep.
You just got to go do it.
Just show up at the party.
That's what Twitter is.
Right, right.
Show up at the party. That's what Twitter is.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate your time, Mo. Thank you so much. And we'll be following along all season.
Thank you, guys. If I can do anything else, just let me know.
Awesome. We'll stay in touch for sure.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
See you. Thank you.